This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 101-year-old Henry Mizuki of Shelby Township, Michigan, originally from California's San Joaquin Valley. Henry would end up serving with the 442nd Regimental Combat Team in World War II, while his younger brother Jim, or Skip as Henry called him, used his Japanese language skills in the military intelligence service. Henry, the oldest of the four Mizuki children, graduated from Sanger High School in 1936.
I was cheerleader. I was also editor of the school paper.
What did you study at Fresno State?
Dad wanted me to study business administration, so I was a pretty bad student. I'm not a businessman. But the funny part was later on after the war, I started my own business as primarily as a freelance photographer. I found out that the business education that I got here at Fresno State in 36 was very much applicable. I mean, even when I talked to my son who was in automotive supply and in sales, we can talk business and they can understand basically the same thing. So the training actually, I guess, was more than adequate enough to carry on 40 years, 50 years, 60 years until I retired. And I've been retired 20 years.
I don't want to leave anything out, but I'm sure you remember something about December 7th, 1941, and where you were, how you found out, and what that meant for you and your family.
We always had read the B. But my parents took the Japanese paper, which was published in San Francisco. I think it gave a lot of information about how Japan was feeling. I mean, to be frank, I don't think the Japanese paper was completely pro-American. I think they might have had a lot of pro-Japanese feelings at that time. In view of the fact that the Asians, Chinese and Filipinos and other people from the Asian countries never could get citizenship. So I think there was a lot of pro-home country feelings. But the majority, I was 90%, maybe 90-95%, one never knows, but they were not anti-Japanese, but they were pro-American. I mean, we would never think, like in Dinuba, there were a bunch of young Japanese, we were 12, 13, 14 at that time, were a major part of one scout troop. We had a nice scout leader who worked for the utility company, gas and electric company, who was a great scoutmaster. Well, I guess the beginning, or even before 1941, December, that there was a lot of talk about the war, and that I can remember Dad saying there was going to be a war between the States and Japan, and when it occurred, we weren't too surprised. I mean, my dad wasn't too surprised. I was, because I don't remember what I was doing earlier, but I remember coming home and my sister running out of the house saying, "Japan struck Pearl Harbor." And it was a Sunday. We were Buddhists, so I don't think, and it was, we lived in Sanger, and the church was here in Fresno. So, and it was 16 miles, and I don't think we went to church every, because 16 miles was a long ways in those days. And she was white-faced. I can remember her being white-faced and said, "The war started in Japan, bombed Pearl Harbor." At that time, then we knew that Dad had kind of prepared us that it was going to be pretty bad for us, and it turned out we had a lot of friends who became anti-friendly. We had other people who said, "Tom, we went through this as Germans in World War I, so you're going to really catch it." So we had friends and not so good friends, but I was going to college, so I guess it was uncomfortable. I don't remember, except that we knew that things were going to happen, so we came mentally prepared, and eventually they gathered up all the Japanese on the other side of 99, were encamped, interred in the fairgrounds. And the funny part was that we would have business with a farming operation that called Jensen and Pillegard over on, I think, 8th Street or something. And it was on this side of the 99, so we were able to go over there and conduct business with Jensen and Pillegard. And we would drive by the fairgrounds on Ventura Avenue and see all these people incarcerated in the fairgrounds. That was, I guess, the early part. I think it was around December that they said, well, no deputies will stay in California or any of the western states. And they, well, except in Manson, California is a western state, but it's up in the hills someplace.
Yeah.
We were sent to Poston. My wife was raised in a little town south of Stockton, and their family moved to McGee, Arkansas. It was called Roer Internment Camp.
So this is your mom, your dad, you, your brother, and your two sisters all are taken off this land that you've been living and farming for all this time and sent to Arizona.
My brother was in Cal Aggies. I was at Fresno State. My sister was in Los Angeles at a sewing school, dressmaking school, but then it was taught by a Japanese family. My younger sister, Sachi, I guess she was in high school.
So all of you are in school one way or another. You're at Fresno State, your brother's at UC Davis, your sister's in this sewing school, but all of a sudden, you no longer have the freedom to do those things.
We were told, you know, other people have very distinct memories. I don't. I fall in the crowd. Whatever happened, they ordered us to pack up, get rid of guns. We had a couple of pistols, 22s, and shotguns. We were supposed to turn all of our weapons into the Sanger Police Department. And one day we found a pistol, a Colt. Dad didn't know he had it. I think we were preparing to go to post, and we found the pistol, and we tried to destroy it by hammering it. Do you know you can't do that? The only thing was, when the war started, we're kind of, you know, frustrated because we didn't know what status we were in. There was a lot of anti-Japanese feelings, but we didn't know that it was going to reflect on the American citizen. And one day, I volunteered for service in Sanger, and nothing happened. And one day, one of our neighbors told Dad, he said, they're not going to take Henry. So Dad told me, he said, Mr. Such and Such said that you're not going to be called. Shortly after that, there was a communication from the Army that classified as an S-4 or something. Anyway,
4C, it
was
4C.
Not only that, but we were undesirable aliens. Was that 4C?
What all the other Nisei veterans have shared with me was 4C. Enemy alien.
I was kind of shocked because, you know, I thought I was a gung-ho American, you know, citizen and willing to serve the Army. And then we went to camp. There was a lot of riot there, a lot of dissension there, a lot of young people, pro and con. Mostly, you know, pro-American, but then a few cons. But I think the worst one was up in Tule Lake, up north in California. We were all given little jobs to do. I think we got a stipend of $19 a month for just living. But anyway, we couldn't just sit around. I remember a lot of kids formed a baseball team, even in 120-degree weather. There was a fellow from Watsonville, California, Jimmy Hirokawa, I'll never forget him, formed a Boy Scout troop, and we applied to the BSA and got a charter membership started. So we were authorized American Army Boy Scout troop. Jim asked me to become one of the scout leaders, so I helped out organizing. We had a lot of young. We didn't have any uniforms or anything, but we still had the membership, so we made them work hard. But in the meantime, the government allowed people to go out of the camp to work, or they were allowed camp to go elsewhere. My sister got sponsorships, I don't know how, by the Baptist group, they sent her to Bucknell University in Pennsylvania. I guess maybe she started her freshman year there, but she graduated from Bucknell. But the rest of us, a lot of people went. They needed the labor. I guess people from Idaho and Montana, Utah, Colorado went to work for the sugar beet farmers. I don't know what professional people did, because I wasn't one of them. My dad was kind of a guy that didn't want his son to be consorting with day laborers. So he found a next door neighbor who had his cousin living in Montana. The man wanted to go see his cousin Montana just to get out of camp. So Dad says, why don't you follow him? So I went with him, and then I went to work on a beet farm near this town of Glasgow, Montana. The owner was the son-in-law of a big rancher there, a cattle rancher, and he had a small beet farm. And I worked on that beet farm, but I also got to ride a horse for the first time to go from his farm over to the main farm, and the horse would let me get on him. And he'd go over to the gate, wait till I got off and opened the gate, close, and then he'd go through, stop, I'd close the gate, and then we'd follow and go over to the main ranch, and then come back. I learned how to ride a horse. I mean, I made him gallop, get him canter, made him, you know, I got my little short legs, and the stirrups were hanging out like this rather than like this. But anyway, I had a good old time in summer, and we came back. Well, it snowed. I didn't know what snow was until, well, I knew up in the mountains and Sierras, I knew what snow was. I had made a couple of skis in wood shop. They were rather crude skis, but anyway.
They were probably better than your canoe, though.
Yes, certainly, because they were made. We had steam in them, and well, anyway, I think I stayed 6 months or the next year, and then I went to New Jersey to work on the farm. But I was fairly close to Skip. He was working for, I think, the Walden Company. He got along real well with them, because even after the war, they came to visit him quite often. But I got inducted into the Army while I was in New Jersey. I was inducted in Fort Dix, New Jersey, and went down to Jacksonville, Florida, or Camp Landing, Florida, for my Army training.
And all this time, your mom and dad and your sister are still in the camp?
The older sister was a caretaker of the family. She actually, I think, suffered the most, because she had to take care of all of the details. I was overseas after training. Skip was down in Mississippi or Alabama or something. And all of a sudden, he was treated royally. Everything was special. All the Caucasian people were wondering, why is this Asian Jap, you know, supposed to be an enemy's son, being treated so royally? What they didn't realize is they were preparing him for transfer to the military intelligence. And they didn't want anything to happen with him, so they sort of watched over him carefully.
And I want to hear about, you know, your time in the Army. But did you ever get a sense for what the most difficult thing for your parents was, to be taken from their home and to end up in this camp? Did you ever get a sense of what the hardest element of that was for them?
I think Japanese people are kind of pacifists. And there's a book, it's by William Hosokawa. If you will read the book, I think you'll understand. I think it's called The Quiet Americans. And it's about how, despite the incarceration and everything, that we weren't really harboring any animosity or ill feeling. There may have been some mixed feelings that the elderly Japanese parents who came from Japan may have fostered a lot of allegiance to Japan. They were Japanese. They still weren't American citizens. They didn't acquire citizenship until, you probably know, we came back from the war. And then, for the first time, we knew what it was to have a political backing in Congress, because we had a couple of veterans who are now representatives from Hawaii in the Senate. Like, we had Norma Mineta from up in San Jose, who eventually became part of the cabinet. So I think the attitude changed, the administration changed. So they passed a law where not only the Japanese Americans, but I think a lot of the Asians could acquire citizenship.
And you were a citizen because you were born in this country. But they had said, hey, when you want to get in the Army, no, 4C, enemy alien. All of a sudden, a couple of years later, as you've been in the camp, left the camp to go work, and now you're in New Jersey, they say, oh, we need some more bodies now, so you're okay.
That's right. And then they shipped us down to Camp Lanning. We went down. We finished our basic 12-week training. I forgot how long it was. But anyway, all of a sudden, they shipped everybody back. And most of us went to back up near Washington, D.C. But one day they called me up and they said, Mizuki, report to such and such. And I said, now what? I guess what infraction did I do? And they said, no, we're going to pull you out. And the rest of them are going to be shipped overseas. I was sent over to a short course, maybe 4 weeks, 6 weeks, I can't remember, of training on all the weapons that our infantry was going to use, from the carbine to the 45 pistol to the 45 machine gun to the Browning. Well, there are two, one that was stationary, the other one you could carry around, and so forth, and so on, the M5s. And I think it was 13 weapons, including a 20-millimeter cannon, and we had to learn how to take it apart, put it back together. They would make the weapon inoperable, and we had to know immediately what was wrong and replace the part. And they gave us this rank of T5, which I ended up with. And it was called the Armor Artificer.
It's break time again. The 442nd Regimental Combat Team was the most decorated unit of its size in all of World War II. Henry's 442 experience would be a little different from those who deployed with the unit earlier on. How was it that he came to meet the Pope? And while his may have been one of the American lives saved by the dropping of the atomic bomb, you'll hear his sobering connection to one of the lives it claimed. Hometown Heroes comes down the home stretch after this.